Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Theodore Whitbread is a composer, concert presenter, educator, and music executive. He currently serves as Vice President of Education with the New York Philharmonic. He has composed a major piece for the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra, which we'll hear about in just a moment. But first, he's joining us now from the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Ted, welcome to In the Moment.
Thanks so much, Lori.
And also with us today is Delta David Geyer, music director and conductor of the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. David, thanks for being here as well.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Ted, let's start with the poetry of Hafez, which makes sense because it's something that sort of influenced this work that premieres, has its world premiere at the Washington Pavilion this weekend. And I want to talk about that work. But first, I want to know where that poetry sort of fits in to your context and what it meant to you.
Well, the poetry of Hafez came into my life at a very opportune time, just as I was beginning to think about this piece for South Dakota Symphony and my dear friend David Geyer. Hafez is a Sufi mystic poet, 14th century Persia. It seems like his predecessor, Rumi, is better known, and I've known Rumi's poetry for a long time. But when I discovered Hafez's poetry, it seemed to me to go to a much deeper and more joyful place and really provided a way for me to think about a multi-movement piece for today and for people thinking about what really matters in life today.
So do we sort of see that in the composition some way? How do you work? Does it just influence you in the background and it's something the listener might never experience? How important is it to the finished product?
Well, I guess it's crucially important to the finished product in that there's a spirit about Hafez's imagery, which is just outlandish and unrestrained and, as I say, just full of joy and finding the divine and everything around us that suffuses the piece, but it's not that the piece is actually about Hafez, or except for a couple of specific spots, it's not that it's illustrating specific poems. It just made me aware of a whole kind of mode of artistic expression, just to go for some extremes. And I'm really looking forward to hearing the orchestra do that.
Yeah, because nobody's heard this.
Nobody's right. Heard it yet. So Delta David Geyer, you two go way back. Tell me about sort of how you met and your relationship over the years.
Well, that's kind of crazy. we actually met on a playground in Brooklyn, New York, because our kids were part of the same babysitting co-op.
Well,
and so we spent our first, co-op swapping venture together, talking about Bartok and Stravinsky.
And your kids are grown now, so that's a while, right?
Yeah. Our kids are Ted's kids are about exactly a year older than mine, so it's sure. Pretty much on the same track,
right? Early 20s now,
right? So why commission him for this piece? Why is he the composer that you reach out to?
Well, so Ted and I we've had these multiple intersections of working, he was with Meet the Composer, the organization, when we met, and he took me to their offices, and that organization has now become New Music USA, which is the organization just gave us this big residency with composer Jared Tate. Then Ted started working at the New York Philharmonic, and I was already there, and we ended up doing many programs together, creating young people's concerts together, and that was just a really joyful time for me. But as a composer, I've always, from the very beginning, he was sharing his music with me. He's actually, you've been here before in South Dakota. We did your piece Grail on a chamber orchestra tour that we did. But Ted, honestly, he was after me to do his violin concerto, like dogging me to do this piece. And I finally, I just said, Ted, I have contemporary violin concertos coming out of my ears. So many people wanting to do that. Why don't you just write me the piece that you're dying to write?
Hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And Ted, how often do you hear that from someone? Yeah. Write me what you're dying to write.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that rare?
I was just going to say that's the first time, and hopefully not the last, but that's a great thing for a composer to hear. Because at a certain point, the pieces we've already written are only a way to get to the next piece to write, right? So my violin concerto turns out to be part of a huge trend. It's like, as David says, everybody's writing violin concertos now. They're winning Pulitzer Prizes. It's like that's kind of an important medium today. And so mine is one of many of those. But to receive the request just to write that next piece that you're wanting to write, is a great thing.
Tell me about, is it Sinfonietta? Sinfonietta, how do I say that?
Sinfonietta.
Sinfonietta. Yes. Tell me about that work.
Yeah, so obviously, as it sounds, Sinfonietta means a small symphony. It doesn't refer to the orchestra being small, but to the form being small. It's five short movements, so a total of about 25 minutes, I think. We'll find out on Saturday. Its namesake is a wonderful piece by Leoš Janáček, a Czech composer. Sinfonietta is from the 1920s and is a very colorful piece. Have you ever done that?
It was done by the SDSO right before I came, when Susan Haig was the music director here. Yeah,
right. So that's an inspiration for me because the five movements of that piece are just really extreme in different kinds of expression, different ways. So when I realized that's how I was going with this inspiration from Hafez, then that seemed like an appropriate title.
When you say the word extreme, what does that mean to you?
You'll find out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it means that sometimes I want the instruments not to play pretty, you know, but to play out and really go for it.
How do the musicians feel about that, David?
Yeah.
You know, when you're feeling your way with a brand new piece, like we read through the piece on Wednesday night, last night we rehearsed some more detail. Tonight we're going to give it a good hour with Ted in the room being able to guide us. So I would say that people are, you know, a little timid about actually, you know, taking it full on. I kept asking them, you know, I kept telling them, he's going to want more of this. He's going to want more of that. Louder here, more extravagant, more energy, you know, that sort of thing.
Right. But then when it's quiet, it's really quiet.
Yeah,
as
right.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
So Ted, what are you listening for? Are you listening for what's already in your head? Are you listening for a new experience?
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, that's a great question because it is some of both. As soon as you put the double bar in a piece that has come to the end of composing a piece, as a composer, you feel a loss because it's no longer just your private thing. And of course, the whole goal is to put it out in the world and have people commune with it and really learn from it and put their own experience into it, because the whole listening experience is, you know, collaborative, right? So I'm listening, of course, to hear it be somewhat like what I have in mind, but the real joy is in hearing the things that I didn't expect and how the musicians and interpreters bring it to life in their own way.
David, can you put into context for me this notion of a world premiere of a piece? Give me some historical context for how major works are sort of received by the public for the first time.
I have this book that I carry with me to a lot of pre-concert talks. It's called The Lexicon of Musical Invective. It's by a composer named Nicholas Leninsky. It's basically every bad review of every great piece of music ever written. Lambasting Beethoven for his Fifth Symphony. Calling Brahms, terrible names and saying that he didn't know how to write a melody. You know, that kind of thing. So,
why carry that with you?
Because I need to contextualize that for people. The fact is that all music was new music at one point. Everything. Like, there was a premiere of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And a lot of people didn't like it. It was too forward-thinking. It was too much out of the box. Too much not what they were used to hearing. So what we've tried to cultivate with the SDSO audiences over the last 12 years is a curiosity, an openness. And, I would say, you know, not everybody, but we largely succeeded with that. I mean, the conversation now is more like, you know, I'm coming to the symphony not to hear my favorite piece or my favorite soloist. Yes, there is that, but it's more about what am I going to find here, and knowing that I'm not going to like everything on the program. You know, if you don't like this piece, then the chances are for the person sitting next to you, this is the most thing on the most interesting thing on the program. Mm. And if you don't like the piece, then wait 20 minutes and the next piece you're going to love, kind of thing. You know, it's
sure.
it's okay not to like something. I'm not setting up Ted's piece that way. Don't get me wrong, but it's part of a larger mission of carrying on this tradition of classical music, of symphonic music, because we have this 500 years worth of history. And the masterworks were not found, a couple of exceptions here and there, but, you know, generally not recognized as a masterpiece at the moment that they're premiered, that they get played. And over time, they enter into a canon, you know, and...
Yeah, it's surprising, actually, to reflect that the pieces that become the canon are generally the ones that were not accepted at the time.
Right, they were the forward-thinking ones.
Exactly.
You read Mozart's letters at the end of his life, and he was despairing that people were not understanding his music. Like the 40th symphony, the transition in the last movement from the exposition to the development. I mean, he uses a 12-tone row, which is a 20th century technique, mm-hmm. to get from one place to another. It was incomprehensible to people at the time. So absolutely incomprehensible.
So, Ted, what if I really like it? Is that a bad sign? What if it's my favorite thing on the program tomorrow night?
Then that's the best of all possible
okay.
worlds.
Yeah. And also, Ted, Gugak, traditional Korean music. How does that tie in with this? We got about a minute left. Let's include that, though, too.
Yeah, thank you. It's been an increasing obsession of mine musically, the traditional music of Korea. I've had the opportunity to spend time in Korea studying with master musicians there. And so the finale of this piece is titled Talnori, which means mask dance. And it's inspired most by a live performance that I got the chance to see traveling in the countryside of Korea, seeing something that has its roots in shamanistic practice but has survived and evolved over the centuries there in Korea.
Hmm. But there's that's the other aspect of this piece, other than the literary Hafez mm-hmm. inspiration. We have, you know, a lot of it is folk music inspired and based. Yeah.
Hmm. Yes, yes.
I will be in the audience, and I will catch up with you this weekend to learn more about this. Our guests today have been Theodore Whitbread, composer, currently serving as Vice President of Education with the New York Philharmonic, Delta David Guyworth, the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. The South Dakota Symphony Orchestra performs Sinfonietta this weekend. Also on the program, Schumann's Symphony No. 2 in C Major, Opus 61. And the South Dakota Symphony Youth Orchestra joins the orchestra on stage as well for Rossini's Overture to La Gazza Ladra. Did I get that right, David?
Very well. Yeah,
good.
Thank you. It means the thieving magpie. It was an opera by Rossini.
I get daily coaching from Owen DeYoung on pronunciation.
Oh, there you go.
That's
fantastic.
Coming up Saturday, January 14th, 7:30 Central at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And now we're going to take a look at our arts calendar. Steve Zwemke, what else is happening this weekend?
Thanks, Lori. Tomorrow is Super Saturday at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls. The day's activities include hands-on experiments, themed art projects, and guided tours. The Firehouse Wine Cellars in Rapid City continue their V-Note sessions with two concerts this week. Pop folk artist Elf Carpenter performs tonight, and jazz and blues artist Sophia Beatty plays tomorrow night. Shows are at 7 p.m. Mountain. And Racing Magpie in Rapid City opens its doors to the public tonight at 5 p.m. The open house features local musicians and modern native art. There's also a raffle for an original piece by artist Swoon. Get all the details about these and other arts events happening in the state at our online calendar, sdpb.org/calendar.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. SDPB's Steve Zwemke, producer for In the Moment, was in Sioux Falls last night at Total Drag for a little live music. Steve, tell us how it was.
You know, it was the first time I've went to a show at Total Drag, and it was outstanding, an outstanding evening. We had local performers from Sioux Falls, And at the top of the list was a guy that's with us right now. And I'm really grateful we were able to pull him off the interstate. He is on his way to Omaha for another show tonight. And he's a guitar player. He's a singer. He's been doing this for a number of years. But I think the thing foremost is that he is a songwriter, and he is one of the best songwriters I know of. Lori, let me introduce you right now to the man on the other side of the board there, David Dondero.
Hello, David, and welcome to In the Moment.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for getting off the interstate here in Vermilion, going from Sioux Falls to Omaha, and stopping by to spend some time with us.
Yeah, it's nice to be. I had no idea this town was here. I always just blazed through.
Yeah?
I'm glad I stopped.
Some good music venues in this town to play as well. You play all over the world, really. You've played some really interesting places. To give me an idea of what your schedule and touring schedule is.
Well, lately I've been doing regional, you know, around the USA primarily. But, you know, and coming up this year, I think later on I'll be in Australia and possibly in UK around about late April, I think. I'm not yet sure.
Right.
I do a lot of my own bookings, so it's kind of. But I also have a guy helping me with that now in the States only, though.
A lot of travel. But, how does that influence your writing?
That's it. It's definitely a lot of the stuff I do is about places and experiences with different people, different lives, many different lives around the country that I've led, you know.
So how do you do that if you're passing through? How do you really capture in writing that sense of place or that sense of character?
Well, I find myself a lot of times dangerously behind the wheel trying to write down lines, you know, as I'm as I'm driving, distracted driving. But it's, you know, that method usually, and then that kind of evolves into revision into and then placed into little riffs and simple, very simple stuff, what I do with the guitar, and just kind of use that rhythmic, you know, rhythm to put some lines over. You know, very easy, like anybody who does folk music would know, or any kind of simple songwriting.
What does folk music look like in America today?
Folk music is just like it looked, I think, any other day. It's just a simple expression of what some people think's going on at the moment, you know, reflecting either politics or mundane life or death, addiction, any various topics.
Is that so compelling for you, that sort of the ordinary? What's happening right here, just the ordinary stories of life and death?
Well, I think it's the process of life, you know? It's making life a little more interesting than just sitting back and taking it, you know? Maybe reflecting it and giving it back makes it a little more compelling, you know? For me, personally.
Will you play something for us?
Sure. This song is called You've Got Love in You. It's on a new record I just put out.
David Dondero.
Inside the Cat's Eye,
David Dondero. Go ahead, thanks.
You got problems, I got problems too, and you know I don't know what to do now. All I know is you are in you. Maybe you can just try something new, yeah. See the snow on the tree. Oh my God, this is beauty. You got love in your here's to love in your like the snow on the tree. Recognize fleeting beauty. I regret things I had done too. I have messed up my life just like you, yeah. I have thought to end it all too. I have been so far gone, drunk and blue, yeah. I was wrong, now I know it. Here's a song now to show it. True to loving ya, oh. Here's to loving ya, oh. Like the snow on the tree. I don't know about it, I'm not sure about it. All I know, this is all in confusion. She is something, I am nothing. A foundation under my delusion. See the snow on the tree. Recognize fleeting beauty. True to loving ya, oh. Here's to loving ya, oh. Like the snow on the tree.
Thank you. David Dondera is our guest. You're in the moment. South Dakota Public Broadcasting Radio. Can you tell me where that came from?
Well, I was in this place in Colorado, and I was kind of holed up in this house this guy was letting me stay in for a month, and trying to get sober, actually, and I did get sober, and I was just, I was trying to find it, you know, trying to find something, and I found it in the simplicity of that, you know, yeah. That feeling.
Songwriting better sober?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clarity? Why?
Because, you know, I spent many years as a drunk and a drug addict, and, you know, I got, there was some benefits to that, you know, like it did open some doors for me, but then it became a crutch, you know, that I it just started leading me in a different direction away from it, you know, and became a barrier to it, you know.
Music.
And I didn't even realize it, to music, you know. And then when I finally got through that barrier, you know, away from addiction, you know, it opened my brain again in a more real way, I think.
And there was music.
Yeah.
Yeah. More accessible to you then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me how you develop an idea that you might be driving on the road and have a little distracted moment, scribble it in your notebook. How do you develop that into a full song? What's that process like for you?
Well, sometimes it's all in one shot, just a simple pattern, and then you just add the words on, it fits right. And then other times it's a 10-year situation, you know? Like that song, See the Snow on the Tree, is that was a ditty for 15 years, and then I put the lyrics on it. It used to have like 20 different versions of lyrics on it, but and I'm not even sure if it's a good song. It's probably, you know, sometimes the best songs come out all in one draft, and other times like that one, it's like 50 different drafts.
I like the song. I don't know. But I think it's a good song. Elizabeth Gilbert, who is a writer, tells a story about Tom Waits in his car and a song coming to him, and he can't write it down because he's in L.A. or something and it wouldn't be safe. And he sort of looks up at his muse and says, are you kidding? You see that I'm driving
right
here,
now.
Right? What's your relationship with, like, do you feel like Tom Waits, that it's coming from somewhere else and being communicated to you, or do you not really feel that?
I don't feel that. I think it's just a situation of boredom and possibly the different, what I ate for breakfast, you know, colliding with the synapses in my brain.
Yeah.
You know.
Would you play again for me?
Sure.
If you're just joining us, David Dondero, set this one up, please.
This one is called The Capitol Buildings Bleed. But this one was written on the Metro in D.C. You know, a lot of times I live in the D.C. area now, and I'll get on the train and just kind of write or look out the window and go out to the fingers of the train lines, to the ends of the fingers of the train. And
it's coming full circle. your own Siddhartha. Chased your tail for years all around the country. Her ghost is on the train, vapor in the rain. Faced you, failed you, feared another disappointment. Listen what your mama said. You drive around until you're dead. You're gonna go and drive yourself crazy. Scattered is a family, shattered by the tragedy. But why you gotta drive yourself crazy? Carpet, the flaking of the paint, sliver of the moon, candle of a saint. The traffic on the beltway is dripping through the rainy day. Capitol buildings bleed, doling out the violence. You listen what your mama said. You drive around until you're dead. You're gonna go and drive yourself crazy. Scattered is a family, shattered by the tragedy. Why you gotta drive yourself crazy? Coming full circle, your own Siddhartha. Chased your tail for years all around the country.
Our guest is David Dondero, driving from Sioux Falls concert last night. He's on his way to Omaha, stopped by to see us in Vermilion. We talked to some classical musicians earlier, and I kind of feel the same way about music. Your music that I do about classical music, it's not background. When I'm listening to it, there's an intimacy to it and a complexity to it lyrically that I want to just sit and experience. Do you like that sort of people interacting with your music like that, just on a deeply personal level?
Absolutely. I would hope for that, to make a direct connection with people, rather than being background. It's really hard to be the background when you're trying to communicate with someone. You know, like I do it a lot, you know, playing a bar and you're the background guy in a corner with a guitar, and that could be really rough on you psychologically, you know, if you're trying to break through to someone. Sometimes you do, and that's the most gratifying, you know, when you can make the connection through a noisy bar. You know.
But that's a vulnerability to that, too.
Yeah, you put yourself on a limb. Roll the dice, take a chance to see if they might give you a chance. And sometimes they do.
Allowing yourself to be seen at a deeper level than many people do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we thank you for it.
Well, thank you for...
You've been performing and writing for years. Where are you at in the trajectory?
What do you mean?
What do you want to do next?
I want to step forward and experience the coming of the spring, first Mardi Gras, and then the beautiful summer coming on with the plants coming back and the garden, and then the cycle continues. That's what I'm looking forward to.
We got time for one more. Will you play us one more song?
Sure.
Thank you.
This one is an older song called the Motion Picture Song. It's one of the first songs I ever wrote. But I've been liking to play it lately again.
Yeah.
Officer, you got me wrong. I was only singing my song. Then you happened to come along and try to change my key. Maybe I will like your tune. You sprung it on me way too soon, like Christmas on the 1st of June. Way too soon for me. I was strolling down the trail of tears, just to find you camping here, your rifle and your combat gear. Wish you'd go away. One who lost his memory, another lost his sight to see in the great American tragedy. Sound in the bed you've made. Where does the motion picture go? Can't stop the ending to infinitize your soul. Will I ever know? Wanna read a book, that's right, I'm gonna stay up every night to understand the one big fight, people trying to be free. Wanna hear a righteous song, I don't wanna wait so long. Turn it up and play it strong and let the notes go free. Where does the motion picture go? Can't stop the endings to infinitize your souls. Will I ever know? My depression's my own choice. Happiness can't find a voice. Cops just come when we rejoice. Sadness of our town. You put faith in the Lord. Feel like you got ignored. Anonymous and underscored. And always hanging around and around. And where does the motion picture go? Can't stop the ending to infinitize your soul. Will I ever know? What happens when I sleep, when I don't dream and I'm in deep, unconscious about souls to keep and unaware of living? It's like, oh, when I die, will I know that I died? Or if ever was alive, was I living? Where does the motion picture go? Can't stop the ending to infinitize your soul. Will I ever know? Ma, don't think so.
David Dundera's latest album is Inside the Cat's Eye, but you can find many albums to choose from there. Thank you so much for stopping by today. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me here. I appreciate it myself.
When we come back, we keep the music going with 35th and Taylor. Stay in the moment. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're in the studios in Vermilion now, and with us, a couple members of the band 35th and Taylor. They have toured the region for 5 years now, honing their sound with the great experience of being on the road. We've got Anna Taylor with
How
us.
Are
Anna,
you?
Welcome. And Evan Kaler, welcome. Thanks for being here as well. This is part of the group. Anna, tell me, who are we missing?
Well, there's two other members in the group. Max and Jack. Max Miller plays drums, and then Jack Osborne is bass player.
So we have a pared down acoustic set.
Yes.
Right now. Give us a background. How'd you get together and sort of start making this work?
Well, we've been playing for a little over 5 years now, so playing in bars since we've been 12 and 13 years old. And me and Evan are original members of the band, and then Max and Jack joined a little over a year after we formed the band. And we've been together ever since. Max and Jack are still in high school, and Evan and I attend University of South Dakota.
So how do you kind of create your own sound at that age, 12 and 13, high school, college?
Well,
We
recently just put out the album I Know Your Trouble, and it's not our first album, but it's our first album that we think is a cohesive piece and that we really developed our own sound, so... I would kind of describe it as bluesy, alternative rock, wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, it's kind of a mix of a lot of different things.
A little bit like Black Keys was our inspiration.
Sure.
Grace Potter, that kind of stuff.
Do you want to be in one of those boxes? Is that helpful for you? Or do you want to be sort of one of those groups that you can't quite say they're alt-rock, they're folk, they're
this?
Yeah,
I think that's what we are. We're a little bit of a mixture, but it's definitely, with this last album, we've created our own sound.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's hear something. Tell us what you're going to play.
Ain't Coming Down first?
Yep.
All right, this is the only acoustic track off of our album. This one is called Ain't Coming Down.
Give up, but it's 1:42. By the look in your eyes, you're feeling it too. Oh. You're probably right, I should go home. But a truer lie ain't ever been told. Oh. No, I don't think we should wait. Fortune just don't hesitate. Let the smaller things define us. Now the smarter things we say. My heart in my hands and holes in my shoes. Wearing them out, I'm trying to give it to you. Oh. Tomorrow just don't matter right now. Stay higher than them clouds. We ain't coming down. We ain't coming down. We ain't coming down. We ain't coming down. Oh, and I see through you. Let the morning come and chase the night away. Soon that sun will set again. In your arms, in your hands, stoke the fire to what you can. Keep the world away. I don't care as long as we stay here. Tomorrow just don't matter right now. Stay higher than them clouds. We ain't coming down. We ain't coming down. We ain't coming down. We ain't coming down. Don't wait, don't stop to think. Open your heart to bigger things. Don't slow your rope. Don't go your own way. Closing our eyes to sleep. We dream, we live, to love we leap. Now we're just too close to making it. Oh, and we ain't coming down. We ain't coming down. We ain't coming down. We ain't coming down.
You're in the moment with 35th and Taylor playing for us live, two members of the group. Anna, you're playing in a pretty small venue right here. We're cramped into a tiny little studio. You've played intimate bars and then mm-hmm. much bigger stages. What's the difference for you as a vocalist to sort of connect with an audience?
I think it totally depends on the audience. I mean, we have played in smaller bars, and then we've played at the Tyson Event Center in Sioux City, opening up for Andy Grammer in front of 5,000 people. So, it totally depends on the audience and how much they're into it. I would say I almost prefer it doesn't matter if it's a big crowd or a small crowd. If the audience is into it, then we're having a great time.
What do you get back from them, Evan?
Just, I mean, if they're feeling it, it's easier for me personally just to play better and stuff. Mm-hmm. If they're receiving it well, it makes me feel good about what I'm doing, and that means I'm doing the right thing, you know,
yeah.
Conveying.
It's kind of like a high.
Yeah.
What do you want them to feel?
I mean,
what do you want them to experience? Yeah.
I mean, whatever it speaks to them. I mean, the music means something to me, but it should mean something different to them.
What's the songwriting process like for this group?
I write all of the lyrics, and then a couple songs off the album, Evan has wrote the music to before I wrote the lyrics, but most of the time it's me writing the songs. And we also worked with a co-writer, Rick Todd, on this album, so that was an amazing experience.
What kind of writer is Anna? What kind of songwriter is she?
I mean, it's kind of like the Lennon McCartney thing, I would say. I mean, it's poppy melodies and stuff. I mean, it's very her own thing, yeah. You know?
She have a voice?
Yeah, definitely.
She has something to say?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Evan. Huh.
100%. What's that process like for you then? Do you get nervous
sometimes
having to share, you know, something that's your brand new sort of thought and idea, might be personal, introduce it to, and this is your first audience,
yeah,
then?
Not really nervous anymore, just I've known Evan for so long. I've known the guys for so long, so they're like family. But sometimes it's a struggle. Sometimes you can write a song in 15 minutes and it's, you think it's awesome, and then there's another song that takes you 3 months and you're like, oh, I just can't finish this. But it starts great.
Why is that? Why can't you find certain things?
I honestly don't know. It's super weird. Like a song, Night Terrors, off our album, that came to me in 15 minutes, and then some of them took months, and it's just, I don't know. I don't know why exactly.
Do you participate in that at all? You control it at all? You're trying to
wrestle?
Yeah,
I try to work on writing every day and coming up with new ideas for the writing process, but it's kind of a gamble if it's going to go quick or not.
You don't get to be in total control.
No, I don't.
Yeah. Evan, tell me a little bit about your background musically.
I play guitar. I'm 19 now. I've played guitar since I was probably 8 or 9 years old. I took lessons and stuff, and it was probably when I was about 10 or 12 that I really decided that I wanted to do this, and all through high school, that's all I did was music and guitar. And so, I mean, I don't really do anything else but guitar and stuff, so I'm kind of boring that way, but I don't know.
What do you think that instrument has yet to teach you?
That's endless. I mean, you look at people like Jimi Hendrix and stuff. I mean, they're always, if they come up with an album, you go, you can't get any better than that, and they do. Mm, yeah. So there's always something new. That's the great thing about music, is there's always more.
Is that intimidating or exciting to you?
A little bit of both. I mean, it's kind of, the big picture thing is kind of intimidating, but I'm up for the challenge.
Yeah. Let's hear something else. What's next? This is 35th and Taylor.
Well, let's play the title track of our album. Yeah. So this is I Know Your Trouble, but acoustic version.
All right.
I'm crooked and you're insane, and we the perfect team. I feel a shiver running up my spine, you're electrifying. Oh, and it's all fun, it's all games, till it hurts. Oh, and it's all fun, it's all games, till it burns. Oh, and I know you're dangerous, but this half feels to be alive. Oh, and I know you're trouble. Oh, no, no, I don't care, 'cause it feels right. And be my something new to own a better losing bet, 'cause baby, in a mind's enough, a grave regret, I'm caving in. Oh, and it's all fun, it's all games, till it hurts. Oh, and it's all fun, it's all games, till it burns. Oh, and I know you're dangerous, but this half feels to be alive. Oh, and I know your trouble. Oh, no, no, I don't care. 'Cause it feels right within this feast of fame and rises. Starving soul, the edge is blinded, burning down the buildings that's around. Oh, and tidal waves and ocean swells, drowning us, the living will. Maybe we're the rightest when we're wrong. Oh, when we're wrong. Oh, dangerous, but this half feels to be alive. Oh, and I know your trouble. Oh, no, no, I don't care. 'Cause it feels right. Oh, and it feels right.
You're in the moment with 35th and Taylor. You can find them online, 35thandtaylor.com. They recently finished their latest project, I Know Your Trouble. That was the title track, acoustic version. Yep. It was recorded in Nashville. So find them online. Anna Taylor, Evan Kaler. Yep. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
We appreciate your time. We got about 30 seconds left. What do you hope? This is, you're choosing a life for yourselves now. Mm-hmm. In music, what do you hope that you can give besides what you can receive?
Well, right now we're really hoping to be a national act, and I hope every time someone sees us, they get something out of us, our music, and they want to come back. So,
well, we want you to come back.